discussions, where we take our kids' favorite movies and look at them through the lens of Dungeons & Dragons. If you've ever looked for a new way to enjoy your kids' favorite movies while watching them for the zillionth time, then come along with us as we do an in-depth discussion of the characters and plots of these beloved movies as if they were a D&D adventure.
Welcome to the Halloween edition of D20 Date Night Discussions. We actually discussed a couple different movies that we could go over for this one, and then we decided to go with Coco.
Coco is a Disney movie. This one, we haven't actually let our kids watch yet. We decided to screen it. Kind of centers around the Day of the Dead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's a pretty good movie. Very surprising.
Yeah, I guess it depends on the age of your kids. Ours right now, our oldest is 5, and we discussed it. And we actually think that she could watch it. And I even think the 2-year-old could, too. It's a cartoon, right? So you can just tell them it's pretend. That's all you got to tell them. But even for, you know, slightly older kids, especially those that are experiencing death in the family for the first time or something, it might be a really good movie in those circumstances, help you lead into those discussions. But as far as for the Halloween side of things, it's a lot of fun. It was a very good movie. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, it was very good. We enjoyed it. I've watched it, I think, twice since we started talking about it.
Right.
So.
And so a lot of fun. So, but from a D&D perspective, we're talking about Coco. So let's talk about our main characters and classes. So, Miguel.
I mean,
he's the main character.
He is who the movie centers around, and it's pretty straightforward what he is. He wants to be a musician throughout the whole thing.
Oh yeah, he's a bard.
Music gives him confidence and power and lets him do what he wants to do. It reunites his family.
Oh yeah.
It does everything. Miguel is absolutely a bard.
Yes.
Without question, a bard.
Yes, he finds out stuff about himself because of the music. He finds out stuff about his family. I mean, it's all, yeah, everything is all about music. The music is awesome, by the way, in this movie. Yep, so Miguel is a bard. And, I mean, I guess, do you consider Hector a main character, too?
I mean, Hector would be, I guess, the equivalent of his sidekick if this were, like, a duet-esque campaign.
Right.
I mean, the whole story does center around Miguel, but Hector is there with him, travels with him, mm-hmm. helps him,
comes back for him.
So he definitely could be considered a main character as well.
Right. Now he's also a bard, right?
I'm thinking maybe a bard, but maybe some kind of rogue-esque thing, because he does a lot of deception disguises.
Yeah, he does a lot of disguises.
Because he does the disguise at the beginning to try to get out of the land of the dead. And
right.
So it's very possible that's what he is. But I think he could go either way for that, because he is definitely a bard because he plays music. But you could, you could kind of build it as bard with entertainer background, or bard with like a background that has like a deception background kind of thing.
Well, but he didn't get his deception until he entered the land of the dead, right? So up until that point, he was just the bard. And
right, but that's not the character in the movie.
Right,
the character in the movie is not living Hector. The character in the movie is skeleton Hector.
Right.
Who barely plays any music at all.
Right. That's true. That's true.
So.
And he definitely has like a lot of mentor vibe thing going on there with Miguel. He teaches Miguel how to perform, right?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It's not, if you don't just sing and play, you have to perform. And,
I think you could do him, like I said, just so, give it a little variety, because, in a movie with a lot of singing, oh, everybody's a bard!
Right.
But, I mean, Miguel definitely is. Yes. Hector, I would put him more, like, maybe roguish trend or something like that, just because of the deception. Because he would rather get what he wants through deception than anything else. He would rather try to, like I said, he tries to trick or make a deal or negotiate or persuade, stuff like that. Which, again, could be very bardish, but
that's true. A lot of charisma there and stuff. Now, Miguel also has an animal sidekick companion. Spirit guide? Is that what it was? Was that what they kept calling him? Spirit
guide? Yeah, that's what they were. I don't remember the term they used for in the movie, unfortunately. But, yeah, they had a little spirit guide to guide him through the land of the dead.
Mm-hmm. And it was the dog, Dante?
Dante.
Dante. He was, well, he was as entertaining as Hey Hey, I think, in Moana.
Yeah, he was definitely on that same par.
So, I think
definitely some funny parts.
Yeah. So there's our characters. What do they call it? A sausage that went to the barber or something like that?
It's like a sausage. It's either a dog or a sausage that fell on the floor of a barber shop.
Yeah. Very funny. All right.
He was very good for some comic relief throughout the movie.
And as we've talked about before, this was a pretty good one for some adult-only jokes that only the adults got. Right, there were definitely at least a couple lines, and it's like you had to be an adult to get it, and it was funny. All right, so the goal of their adventure, so this changes, I think, right? I mean, at first, the goal for Miguel is he wants to play music. Like that's the goal.
That is his whole focus, is
play and perform.
Performing music, being a musician, that's all he wants to do, even though his family is wholeheartedly against it.
Mm-hmm.
And Hector's whole goal is to leave the land of the dead on the day of the dead to go see his family.
Yeah.
And,
all he wants to do is see Coco again, his daughter.
To see Coco, that's all he wants to do.
And, so, but now Miguel, now then the goal becomes get Miguel back to the land of the living, right?
Before he becomes permanently dead.
Yes.
And stuck in the land of the
Instead
dead.
Instead of just, you know, mostly dead. No.
Pretty spot on. I mean, yes.
And so, as we say, nothing is new. Everything is just a repeat. It's just filmed in a different way. His goal, but then it changes again, right? The goal becomes then to save Hector. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is what it becomes at the very end. How do you save Hector instead of allowing him to fade?
Everybody had their own selfish goals
at the beginning.
But once they kind of partnered up and grew and got to know each other, it became more of a
how can I help
goal.
You?
Yeah, help mm-hmm. you, help each other instead yeah. of just help yourself.
Yep. And it's a hallmark of all of these movies, right? It always starts out with a me-mine goal, and then it becomes a our goal, or you go, you know.
With a lot of them. I mean, with a lot of them, it starts selfish, but that's the character growth aspect of it. But yeah, I think that, you know, there's a lot of that can be pulled into a D&D campaign as well of, all right, you have a time limit to get this quest done.
Right.
Because they had until sunrise on the Day of the Dead to get this everything they wanted to get done. And with that time passed, they had to decide, you know, which is more important. And there was one point where it was Miguel getting back was the most important. And then, you know, it was getting the picture back. And then everybody helped out. You know, the family helped out and everything else.
All
and
came together.
Everybody came together to meet the goals.
Yeah. So, there are setbacks. So, I mean, the setback for Miguel from the very beginning is the fact that his family doesn't want him to have anything to do with music. And that's all he wants to do.
I mean, that's kind of a setback, but it depends on how, I guess, you're looking at it. Like, if you're taking it as an adventure concept, he's adventuring in the land of the dead. He's on a mission through the land of the dead to meet his great-grandfather, to get him to make a deal for him to go back to the land of the living to be able to play music. So I guess if you look at the whole thing of it being his goal is to play music, then yes, that's the case.
Yeah.
But his biggest setback in the land of the dead is meeting who he believed to be his great grandfather, Ernesto of his De La Cruz.
Yeah, De La Cruz. And then, but he's not.
But yeah, that's the setback. As it turns out, it's not.
Yeah.
Him. It's. I mean, it's just 4-year-old movie at this point. I don't know if we need to say spoilers and things anymore, but
okay.
It is. It turns out that Hector is his actual great-great-grandfather, you know, and it could have been solved all along had they just follow the spirit guide animal and done, yes, you know,
exactly,
done Dante everything knew. Like that. And
well, I mean, if you think about it, at the very beginning when his grandmother destroyed his guitar, I mean, that was the setback for his goal of playing music, right? She destroyed his guitar. Well, that's what put him on the path to end up in the land of the dead.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that right there is the entire reason he went to try to take the other guitar from the dead, and that's what landed him in the land of the dead. That's what sent him there. So, so sometimes when... And then not only because he went there, he found out who his true great-great-great-great-grandfather was. He saved his soul? Memory?
Memory. Memory? It's hard to say like that, right?
And yeah.
Like,
so he saved him from being forgotten and fading away. He brought music back to his family. He brought his family back together. And he did all of that because his grandmother destroyed his guitar at the beginning, right? Like, that pivotal moment is what put him on that path. And not that he didn't make other choices that could have moved him one way or another, but that right there is what shoved him in that direction, right?
It was definitely the catalyst that sped it along, mm-hmm. for sure.
So, any other setbacks that are... I mean, those are kind of the...
I mean, Hector's is... So the whole premise is the family has to have a picture of them along...
Right, on the...
On their altar, basically.
Yeah, I can't remember what they called it. But their altar, basically.
Just to remember them, that allows the family to leave the land of the dead for the day of the dead to visit their family.
Yeah.
And because of Hector leaving his family to go be a musician, they don't have his picture up anymore. They've mm-hmm. turned away from music.
Yep, they've torn his picture off.
You know, so that's a setback for him, I guess, because, yeah. you know, he's... in the land of the dead and can't leave.
Mm-hmm.
During the land of the dead part of the adventure, he and Miguel get into a little bit of a disagreement about whose gold to do and mm-hmm. taking the picture back and different things like that. So the discord there would be a bit of a setback, I believe.
I mean, the issue with Miguel and his family, like trying to, you know, them trying to send him back, his great-great-grandmother trying to send him back with her blessing, which is the only way he gets back, as long as he promises not to play music, right?
Right.
And he doesn't want to do that. So I mean, that right there, he can't go back unless he agrees not to play music anymore.
Yeah.
Well, that didn't work out. And I guess Ernesto figuring out what's going on and throwing him and Hector in that pit.
Right.
I mean, that's
throwing
a pretty big setback.
Yeah, that's...
I mean, the only reason they're saved is because of the spirit animal things.
Yeah, the spirit animals kind of come through big in this.
Yeah, they really do. And the great great grandmother spirit animal is just awesome. The flying cat with the
like a big jaguar, jaguar with wings.
Yeah, that's awesome. The colors are pretty too. I like the very bright,
very
colors.
Vibrant. Yes,
very vibrant. I mean, I guess when like Ernesto like throws Miguel off the side of the building, right? I mean, that's a pretty big setback right there.
Yeah.
You know, here, I'll kill you.
Again, yeah, being threatened to be killed from being in the land of the dead, that's...
Well, in his case, because the sun was about to rise, he wouldn't make it back, right? So he really, truly would be then fully dead. So...
Yep.
Yeah, a lot of moving forward, moving back, and then he loses Hector's picture. You know, huge setback there for Hector, right? He loses Hector's picture.
So there's no way he can...
So then he can't be remembered by Coco, and I guess, you know, so that whole, how can he help Coco, his grandmother, remember Hector when he doesn't have his picture, right? He can't put his picture up on their altar.
That's true.
So that, I mean, for Hector, and Hector, of course, just tells him, no, just go home. Here's our blessing. No conditions. Go home.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? You don't have to save me. I have to save you, which... I mean, parent to child, grandparent to child, great-great-grand, you know, whatever. I mean, that's obviously, yeah, right? You save the child, you don't. But, so, yeah, those
yep.
are... So,
yep,
yeah,
yep.
Every time you turn around, another step back. Any notable interactions with NPCs?
Well, yeah, I mean
the very first one, the mariachi shoeshine thing, right?
Kind of shows the whole thing, you know, the whole family, like, it's treating his family, grandmother, whatever, as NPCs, like you just said a minute ago. She she destroys his guitar, which sends him down this whole path of needing to steal a guitar to perform the talent show and all this stuff. So, you know, and he had a whole blow up about not wanting to be a part of his family and learning family was important. His family, other than Hector, was a big NPC throughout the whole, you know, NPCs throughout the whole thing. You can treat his family as one unit.
Yeah, you could.
You know, his spirit world family, his Land of the Dead family, tracked him down to help save him and then help to be part of the scheme to get the picture back and do all the stuff. You know, and it just kind of changed. Like, it was a very big change. Like, he affected all of them.
Yeah, he did. He changed everything.
And then, you know, his whole interaction with his great-grandmother, Mama Coco...
Mm-hmm.
You know, and singing to her at the end, and, you know, back to the bard thing about how his music influenced her and inspired her to remember Hector.
Yep.
And just by singing the song Hector wrote for her when she was a kid.
Yep. And then, I mean, that right there, that triggered her memories where she had the missing part of the picture to have put her dad up back on there on the altar. She had all of his letters that proved he was the one that wrote the songs instead of Ernesto, right? So they were able to take that information and suddenly make it to where Hector was remembered by everyone, and no one cared about Ernesto, right? So that whole switch.
And I mean, Ernesto is an NPC villain, if that's where we talk about
this,
that's obviously a huge interaction because...
Oh, yeah. Because he's like, oh, you're my great-great-grandfather. And
they played it up, lived it up, loved it up, you know.
Yeah, so the hours they had. And, oh, I need to send you back. This is great. And then he suddenly realizes, wait a minute. You know, because you figure Ernesto probably knows that's not really his.
I don't know if you figure, you know, if that was the case, if he kind of figured that. Cause I think it's one of those, it's possible he's got grandkids. Yeah. You know, great.
Well, that's what I figured it was at the very beginning. And then when Hector comes in. Try to help Miguel, and then Ernesto is looking at the picture.
Well, it was a quote from the movie.
Yes.
De La Cruz was an actor.
Yes.
You know, very kind of like Roy Rogers-esque character,
yeah,
right? Singer, actor, like, that kind of thing. And there was a movie of his playing in the background of this big party thing he was at, and it quoted something, and they quoted something, and that's when they realized that he poisoned Hector.
Like, wait a minute, you poisoned the guy in the movie. It's
right.
From a movie, what the... And I think right around that, that's the scene where, like, Ernesto realizes, wait a minute, Miguel's not my great-grandson. Great-great-grandson.
Great,
he is Hector's. And Miguel still doesn't realize it, right? Like, Miguel doesn't know at that point.
Correct.
What's going on?
They didn't figure it out until they were in the pit.
Until they were in the pit after Ernesto gets them all, both of them taken care of and thrown in the pit, and he thinks that he's got it all settled, and then because Miguel does realize that at the very least Ernesto murdered Hector.
Typical villain behavior: throws the good guys down a pit, but doesn't see the job is done.
Yeah, I know, right? Just
monologue. I'm sure there's a monologue in there.
Oh yeah. Like, yeah, how many movies does that happen, right? Where,
I guess there is, because he does admit to killing Hector, so.
He does, yeah, he does admit it, and so then but he can't let Miguel take that information back.
At that point, Miguel becomes a liability to him, and.
So toss him in the pit, too, because who cares if he's your great-great-grandson or not, which at that point, I'm pretty sure Miguel had figured it out, that this wasn't.
Yeah.
But he's like, hey, I can get rid of both of them at the same time, who cares?
Yep, it didn't bother him.
No. And then at that point, when Miguel is there with Hector and they're talking, and Hector's like, yeah, I'm fading because the only one who remembers me is Coco and she's forgetting me. And then Miguel's like, wait a minute.
Coco.
Yeah. You are my great, great grandfather. Not Coco. You are. Or not Ernesto, rather. Because your daughter is Coco. And
all the interactions with De La Cruz were big, and then you know, you got little ones throughout the whole thing where, like, the police or the guards for the Land of the Dead are trying to catch Miguel everywhere, and Hector uses his superior roguish deception and disguise kits to get them.
And disguise the whole family so they can go and confront Ernesto and get the picture.
Yep.
But, you know, none of that would have been possible if Hector hadn't first taken Miguel to see the costume lady. Or whoever it was.
I don't remember her name.
Yeah, the one with the papaya thing.
Yeah, she's dressing the actresses up for De La Cruz's performance
as
a
papaya seeds and they came out of the papaya.
Yeah, it's
the
weird.
Dance. Yeah, it's very weird. But you know, well.
I don't remember who her name is. Like,
yeah,
Frida maybe.
Frida or something like that. I think it was that. So, but without
Frida
that
Kahlo.
Interaction, you know, Miguel could not have. Like, they couldn't have had confronted De La Cruz there at the end. Right?
Yeah.
So it like you said, it's all built.
Again,
and
your stereotypical villain monologue situation.
Right, where he tells everybody
what's
going on.
He's telling everybody what happened and did everything, and they just happen to turn the camera on him.
And they're like, oh, hey, look, we can turn the camera on him, and everyone can see what bad guy he is.
Yep.
Alright, so a resolution. So did they achieve their initial goal and then have the goal change? So
they 100% achieved. He
all
wanted
the
to
goals.
Be he wanted to be a musician and he left. I mean, the movie ends with him singing at his family's function. You know,
with
family Day of the
song
Dead event.
They never play anywhere.
Say again?
I said with the best song that they never play anywhere. You only see the other songs, not that one. And I can't even remember it now, but that was, I think we talked about that at the end of watching.
Yeah,
it
was another good
great song and nobody ever plays it. But not only that, right, but he wants to play. His family in the Land of the Dead say, go play, no conditions, we send you with our blessing. And he's like, but I want to remember Hector. And he goes back home, and his family at home still doesn't want him to play, right? But
yeah, they don't know what's going on.
They have no idea. And then he realizes, wait a minute, I can save Hector and Coco and restart that memory if I play for her. And so, like, you're right, he uses that bard ability and charisma and whatever it is. His
you may say he uses that to inspire her to remember
yes,
him.
To
okay, bardic inspiration,
yeah, right, to inspire
if you
her.
Will.
Yeah, and then not only does she remember Hector, but she remembers everything, right? And then she can bring out everything.
Yep, and it changes their whole family's perspective.
Yep, changes their whole family's history forward and back, right? Because suddenly now the family's all about music. I mean, I'm sure they're still making shoes, but they started out with.
Well, yeah, I think that's what supports the family,
but then
music was still a thing, and they didn't hate.
They don't hate any. They don't hate it now.
They right, don't, they don't. They're not opposed to him doing
yeah,
it.
Yep. Any combat?
Not really. There's a lot more running and avoiding things.
Right.
There's not a lot of fighting in the movie at all, actually.
I mean,
which
the
is
only
good.
Thing...
You know, De La Cruz throwing him into the pit.
Yeah. Like...
And there's a little bit, actually, there's a little bit with the NPCs, but not with the main characters,
mm-mm.
because when they're trying to invade De La Cruz's sunrise party concert thing at the end,
yeah,
the uncles tackle them. And
that's right.
And
and
the
they
two,
take their
the two
arms.
Uncles take one of the other arms off and use them like nunchucks.
That was funny.
For it, so.
So on the combat side, as far as like being scary for little kids, not at all.
No, I mean
it's
not violence. The whole reason for scary for kids is this: it's the fact that
if they're all skeletons.
You're in the Land of the Dead, and everybody's a skeleton.
Yeah, everybody.
Everybody. It's cool. I mean, it's just like another world. It's you know, which is as we'll talk about in a minute, how you can apply some of this stuff to a D&D campaign.
Yeah.
Directly, it. Steal the area. Steal the Land of the Dead.
Yeah, that's true.
Wholesale. Just take it.
So, quite a bit of role-playing here, I think.
It's very much more of a role-play movie
yeah.
than a combat movie, which is, you know, one of the pillars of D&D anyway, exploration, role-play, and mm-hmm. combat. So, you've got that going for you anyway. It's a great... To show, like, you don't have to fight stuff. You know, we've talked about... We'll use Raya in the Last Dragon one.
Yes.
It was a big one. They fight through the whole movie.
And then at the end, it's like, oh, wait.
Oh, wait. Oh, you can talk about things. Talk about it.
Yeah.
And this one, they only fight something...
At the very end.
At the
really?
Very end, and it's in the background. It's a 30-second scene as... And just a way for the protagonist to get through to the
next
big role-play scene.
No,
I mean, look at how Miguel gets to De La Cruz. He has to go on stage and sing and perform mm-hmm. for the first time ever. And he gets Hector to help him, and he wins the crowd over.
And then he wins the musicians over. That's how he gets in to
and
see
then
De La Cruz.
Right. And then he, you know, gets in with the musicians to do that. And then when he's in with De La Cruz,
mm-hmm.
he jumps up on the banister and sings
attention.
In front of everybody to get
yep.
his attention.
Yep, exactly.
You know, he uses his charisma to get into things rather than, you know, combat prowess. He doesn't try to fight his way up there through the guards. He just does it.
Well, that's exactly like Hector. I mean, it's all disguises, right? I'm going to disguise myself as this person and that person and this person. Like, all the way through, he's constantly disguising himself, trying to get through places.
Or tricking or wheeling tricking. And dealing with people. It's hey, you know, I know De La Cruz. I can get you front row tickets. And
yeah, exactly.
All this stuff. So, yeah, it's definitely more roleplay heavy for that regard, for sure.
And then a lot of problem solving. A lot. Yeah. Like, just figuring out at the beginning, how do I get back to the land of the living versus the land of the dead? I just thought of this, and I apologize for bringing it up now, but at the very beginning, you know, Miguel's got some roguish, characteristics too, because, you know, he's got that whole hidden hidey hole where he's made himself a guitar, and he has all that music, and he has the videos of Ernesto de la Cruz and all that stuff, like, he's hiding all that from his family.
Yeah.
That's what he's doing and practicing and you know.
Sneaking around and stuff. I think you would apply that more as like a background though, kind of like a...
Like a bard with a...
A modified like urchin background. The urchin background is typically more like grew up on the streets, but you can tell he definitely knows his way around the streets as a shoeshine kid. Mm-hmm. You know, and he's got his little hidey hole and he's got his little pet dog that can get in there with him and everything like that.
So then you've got, any other problem solving?
I mean, like you said, the whole thing, right? Like,
it's always...
he had to problem solve how to get back, and he didn't like the deal his family made with him.
So
they said no music, and the
family.
First thing he did was grab a guitar, so he had to find another family member. Then he had to figure out how to get to that family member.
Yep.
And then when they figured out where that was, in the, you know, it wasn't where Hector said he was going to be, so he had to figure out to get a guitar, and then he had to do a competition, then he had to figure out how to get into the tower, and the tower, how to meet the guy, and how to get out of the pit, and then how to expose De La Cruz and get the picture back. I mean, the whole thing.
And
like
then
you said,
how to get Coco to remember Hector, right?
Right.
I mean, that whole, that was, he couldn't just show her a picture because he didn't have one.
Right.
And it was lost. So now how do you, get Coco to remember him? So that, from beginning to end, just a lot of problem solving in this one. Okay, so what would you carry over into a D&D game? I mean, obviously, the Land of the Dead, right?
Yeah, I mean we'll just start with that part. Like, the Land of the Dead, I mean, D&D has different planes. They've got different stuff like that anyway. But it's just another zone you can use, another area you can use that your players can travel to.
And you can also make it like a, I mean...
And it shows it like...
It doesn't have to be on the map. It could be a portal almost, or
another dimension.
Yeah,
but that's what I'm saying,
Yeah.
Abstract thinking of it, it doesn't... It's just another area that it can be, because in the movie, like you said, The Land of the Dead, to go visit, you have to, like, pass customs. To come back, you gotta go through customs.
Right.
The authorities scan your face to make sure your picture's up where it should be, and, you know...
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
They do a whole lot of that kind of stuff, so it's like a whole bustling thing, but the other thing is just using a stat block, or using a monster out of the monster manual, in this case, skeletons, as not just cannon fodder. As not just bad guys to throw at it, but looking deeper at it, there's not a true, like, undead player race or anything like that. But with a little creativity, I mean, you do the same thing, right? It's a land of elves and dwarves and everywhere else. They just happen to be skeletons. That's why they all look different. You've got elf skeletons and dwarf skeletons and everything else. And it's the same thing. It just adds a different flair on it, a different twist. And then you use some of the descriptors, like the colors, because it was very vibrant. It was very colorful.
Yes, it was.
Throughout the whole thing, and there were different
tiers
of the place. You got the government, the customs. You got the big De La Cruz Tower down to the slums of the families who don't, or the people who don't...
That aren't remembered.
Aren't remembered.
Yeah.
So you've got all that there. Ooh. I mean, you've got a great... It's a city. You could use it as a city or a region or whatever.
And, yeah. You know. And the kind of the cool thing is, right, so the way he was sent to the Land of the Dead was because on the Day of the Dead, he tried to steal from a dead person, Ernesto. He tried to take his guitar, right? And that sent him to the Land of the Dead. I mean, that would be kind of cool to kind of... lead your players into making that mistake.
Well, you send them, you know, they're in a quest to do like a grave robbery, into a crypt or whatever.
And you're like,
and then they take something, and then all of a sudden, as they walk out, the people, you know, there's a group of people coming in, you know, caretakers, priests, whatever, and they can't see them.
And they walk right through.
And they walk right through them,
and they're
right
like,
past
"What
them.
Happened to me?"
And all of a sudden, they see a skeleton, you know, a group of skeletons talking over here, and it's this thing, you know, it's this whole big thing.
That is awesome, yeah, and then, well, and of course, like, the whole situation where suddenly you're in the Land of the Dead, but you're alive.
Right. So you've got to figure out how to hide and blend in.
And how long, you only have 24 hours, right? Or he only had till sunrise. So he only had 12 hours probably or less, right? So he didn't even have, he only had so many hours. You've got this long and then you're now I'm sure most DMs would not be quite that much of a stick. Well, some of them
Might you
be.
Could. I mean, adding a time constraint can add
difficulty but I mean, like, to it. But you wouldn't, I don't know how many DMs would throw this wrench at their players and then say, you got this much time and you're dead.
Well, I mean, I don't know that you'd say dead, but...
Stuck
until the next day of the dead.
Yeah.
Your characters are stuck here for 1 year. So then, you know, you screen wipe it, you fast forward to, all right, 1 year, what happened in this year? Please describe to me how you guys survived.
You quest in the dead, in the land of the dead.
But I mean, describe to me how you did that when you're not dead.
But dead, but not dead. Yeah.
Right. How did you blend in? How did you hide? What did you do, you know? I mean, it's easy to do that because then you build a whole nother adventure off that. And that's the whole cool part about DMing this kind of stuff and creating this stuff is you never know where you're, you know, you had this great adventure planned, even if you're using one of the books, you've got this great adventure planned and then your players decide to, and your rogue, your Abu decides to touch the gym and now you're trapped.
You're trapped.
Yeah. What do you do? Right. And it's,
you roll the die.
It takes this sideways twist and you're like, hold on guys. All right, we're going to stop here for this week.
Yeah.
And now you got a whole plan, a whole Land of the Dead adventure. I know you can steal stuff and change stuff and move stuff that you've already done, you know, but that's a cool idea. That's a cool thing.
It is. And the nice thing.
And who knows, maybe time moves different down there. So it's not, it doesn't feel like a full year.
Yeah. It doesn't feel like
it's been a year. And then, you know, if you're into world building and that's what you're doing, creating your own world and your own adventure and your own campaign, what's happened in your world for a year?
Yeah. Like, what
has changed?
Or what if they come back and you know, time in the Land of the Dead is on a different, like you said, it's on a different clock. So they come back and they've been gone a year and they only think they've been gone a month or something like that, right?
And that's actually, there's a mechanic for that within Dungeons & Dragons already. That's how the Feywild works.
Oh yeah, or maybe like Lord of the Rings.
When you come out of the Feywild, mm-hmm. you actually have to roll a save, and if you fail, you don't even remember being there.
Nice.
And who knows how much time's passed?
Right. But it's kind of like when Bilbo Baggins comes back from The Hobbit, right? He comes back and they're selling all of his stuff because they assume he's dead because he's been gone for so long. Mm-hmm. He's like, I'm right here. I'm right here.
Yeah.
And so what happens, right? Do you still have your stuff? Do you still have your, do people know you?
Yeah, if you're far enough along in the campaign and you had, like, a base of operations and stuff, is it still there?
Yeah.
Who was paying your hirelings that were keeping up with it? What's going on with it? You know.
Right.
You know, if you were trying to, like, say you were trying to go find and destroy a threat of a dragon or something, mm-hmm. and you were gone for a year, well, how much of those dragons destroyed or taken over or changed? What's changed in that year?
Yeah, who's in charge now?
If you're in a political intrigue campaign, who's in charge of the kingdom now? There's a whole lot of stuff you could do with that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And completely change that stuff up.
So, like, to me, I feel like Ernesto, the bad guy, he stole something from somebody and killed them to cover it up, and then made sure he doesn't want anybody to find out. I mean, he's like... It's a textbook bad guy.
It's a Disney movie. It's a textbook bad guy. There's not a lot of creativity or diversity or anything like that in it. He wanted something someone else had. He killed them to take it.
Yeah.
He lived their life. You know, he lived that life and never got caught until he was dead.
Yeah. Yep.
And then they had to kill him again. And that's actually something else you can go with is like, it's common within D&D stuff, is killing a... Like, in my campaign that I'm playing in, my Thursday night one, we fought a Rakshasa. Well, knowing what I know about them from being an uber nerd and actually having researched them earlier that day myself, to kill a Rakshasa in the material plane just sends them back to the Nine Hells, and they reform and come back to you. So he's not actually dead.
But now he hates you.
So has
he, like, got nine lives, or you just
You have to go to the Nine Hells to kill them.
Oh, so they can't be killed on this plane. You have to go there.
Maybe, you know, you kill you kill De La Cruz in the Land of the Dead. Maybe he's actually dead because you're in...
The Land of the Dead.
The Land of the Dead.
Right, but if he killed Hector in the Land of the Living,
Hector's still alive in the land of the dead, but if Hector gets forgotten about in the land of the dead, he's dead again. He's gone. Right.
And they don't know where, but he is
gone. See, there's a lot of this stuff that you're taking it, but there's mechanics and rules and things like that for it already. There's ideas. And that's what we talk about with a lot of these, is just... And you hear, you know, if you watch any other, or listen to any other stuff with it, it's reskinning stuff. It's taking stuff that already exists in D&D, you know, put a fresh coat of paint on it, and using it again.
There are no new ideas.
If you come up with the next great idea, call me, let's talk, we'll work out a deal.
Yeah, right.
At least, you know, leave me a dedication in your book thing. But, you know... That's okay. It doesn't have to be a new idea. If you know what your group likes to play, by golly, play it.
Yeah, exactly. Now there is the thing of just thinking, so he has the, and that may be more into the other thing we're talking about, is like magic items, quest rewards, but he gets Hector's guitar, right? He's playing it there at the end.
He sure does.
So would you consider that a magic item?
Yeah, if we're going to move on to magic items right now, I would absolutely, that guitar is absolutely
magic.
Well, I
was thinking that might be another thing to carry forward, is like, this is your ancestor's magical...
A bardic weapon, that's actually a thing within Dungeons & Dragons like
been
that.
Passed it's passed down from you know, generation to generation.
Absolutely, and it's, you know... It's a cursed weapon to start with, and you cure a curse on it, and you open up all these abilities of it.
Right,
because it's technically what sends him to the land of the dead.
Yeah, so his family's cursed.
It says that in there.
Yeah, that's because he tried to steal it on the day of the dead.
So.
But then it's given to him by Hector there at the end, essentially.
Essentially. Well, it becomes his family heirloom. It's his family heirloom at that point. They can prove it, so... They've got a picture of him with it.
Yeah. And they have all of the letters. But,
you know, that lets him... You know, for bards, their focus for spellcasting is their instrument, or can be their instrument.
So
he's got his instrument now. He's got... You know, he's ready to go on his adventures.
Yep.
And
yep.
be the musician. This great musician.
So anything else, I kind of skipped ahead, but anything else that you would carry forward into a D&D game? Now, what about the whole, like, scanning of the faces to get from the land of the dead to the land of the living, like anything like that? Or that?
Here's the cool thing about D&D settings, is magic can explain anything.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, there's artificers now that create stuff like that, you know.
Yeah.
It can absolutely, magic can do that. You can scan, detect faults. Or, you know, something, a detect thought spell, or it's a scrying device. You go in there, it scries on the family's location based on your face, and, you know, it can tell whether your picture's there or not. You can absolutely use that kind of stuff. It's hilarious. And, you know, if you happen to play with the parents of little kids, see if they notice this stuff.
Right, yeah, exactly. Did you pick up that I did this?
No, don't tell them. That takes the fun out of it.
Oh, well, yeah. So... Now, I did, what about the spirit guide that in the land of the dead was that massive jaguar flying cat thing, Jaquin thing or whatever, but in the land of the living, it was just little, like, alley cat.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that, like I said, the way they did those guys was really cool, because he was this super big, powerful thing, it could track Miguel down, and, but when
he was
in the land of the living,
out and
it
saw the footprints, right?
Yeah, when Miguel was in the land of the living, he was just a cat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when the dead family members are in the land of the living family members can't see them.
Right, yes.
But, like, when Miguel goes to the land of the dead or the first time, they all recognize, his family recognizes him.
Yeah, because they
see him. Because they see him every year.
Every year on the day of the dead. But he never
and then he ends up recognizing them from their pictures.
Yes, he finally figures out who they are. Yeah, no, like, so what about...
But you could use that as, you need a quest guide. You could have a... Ghosts are a thing in D&D. There's nothing that says your character couldn't see them and interact on the Day of the Dead. They can interact with them.
Right, exactly.
That's another thing you could steal and use.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's this one time a year, and you got to be in the right place
at
the right time. So you got to be near your family's altar or where these people are buried, because that's where the bridge from the Land of the Dead comes across.
Right.
You know, if you want to go to the Land of the Dead, you've got to steal something from someone who's dead. And,
mm-hmm.
You know.
So.
You have a quest that sends them to go get something from the land or recover somebody who is a lot, you know, there's all kinds of stuff you can do in there.
It's actually, yeah, it's a lot of fun. And it's even if, and I think there's some things that you could pretty easily, if you have a current campaign you're working with, you could, like, hey, we're going to do the Halloween edition, Day of the Dead, throw it in there for quick little one-off, yeah, like, you know, use the character
a one, your one-week thing right there, and at the end of the time, at the end of your session, they return back to their bodies in the normal world.
Yep.
You know, maybe they've leveled up, they've gained some experience.
Whatever it is, they've gotten a magical item.
Maybe they've each gotten some kind of cool magical thing or something they were looking for. Or, you know, you've got a character who's been looking for their ancestral sword or whatever. Well, maybe now they know where it's at.
Yep, exactly. And so that way, I mean, it may be a fun way to treat the holiday in your D&D game without it all being like vampires and, you know,
it's a cool way you can mix in a Halloween stuff without going to, like you said, the Curse of Strahd, vampire,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, without...
There's some really cool stuff in there with Strahd, you know. I'm looking at dndbeyond.com right now, and it's got a, you know, how to run Ravenloft in one night, which is a big vampire castle adventure in one night.
Yeah.
It's a really cool thing if that's what you want to do. But if you want to keep it a little lighthearted because maybe you've got some younger players or people who aren't into that as much... Mm-hmm. You know, this is a fun way instead of a spooky way.
Yes, exactly.
To do Halloween, which is kind of a different
take. I prefer that.
Which is a different take on it. It's not all scary and monsters. It's skeletons. But they've got personalities. They're not mindless.
But they're your families, or your ancestors, and they're there to help you rather than just hurt you. Because most of the time in D&D, you see a bunch of skeletons, you start firing, you start shooting.
Yeah.
I'd say.
In fact, if you listen to our Hideout episode, that's exactly what I did. Skeleton, I shoot it.
Yes, I shoot it.
Well, his name was Fred, and he had a family.
And now he's gone again.
Now he's gone to go see them again. I mean, that's another thing you could do is, maybe there's someone evil who can trap the family members' essences or whatever.
Right, so they can't come see
you. You've got to go rescue your dead family member from the land of the dead. You know, a necromancer who's tried to pull them into servitude or whatever.
Something, yeah. Don't see, that's pretty cool. And so then you have to, like, carefully check each skeleton, right? Wait, is this family? Or is this the bad guy?
Fred, which is that you?
Right. Any other magic items? I can't.
Not really.
I mean,
the
big one is the
guitar.
The guitar. I mean, that is.
He had guitars throughout, but it's that family heirloom one.
I guess it depends on the way you look at it, but the family photographs on the altar.
You could treat that as something.
You could treat
that
as a magic item because that's what pulls them over or allows them to come to bridge to go across the bridge between the two planes or however you want to think about it.
Yeah.
The flowers, the petals, whatever it is that they've got.
That's more of, like, in my opinion, maybe like a spell component.
Like a component to it, yeah.
Yeah, because that's what, I think those flowers are taking like Aztec marigolds.
Mm-hmm, okay.
And that's what they use to make the deal to bring him back, but that's what they make the bridge out of. So I think that's more of just like a spell component.
Yeah. Okay.
To get to cast that spell.
I mean, quest rewards to me.
He gets a guitar.
He gets the guitar, but he also gets his family's acceptance.
He gets his family's acceptance.
I mean that, and
he changes everything about his family.
Yeah, I mean he stuck himself out there, and I mean for himself, right? I mean, let's be honest. It wasn't like he was altruistic. Like, I'm going to save my family and teach them about how to love music. Like, that wasn't what it was. It was, I want to play music. Music calls me. A musician is who I am, and I'm going to do it no matter what my family thinks, right? That's where he started, and then he ended up in a place where I'm going to save my current family, I'm going to save my great-great-grandmother, great-grandmother, and I'm going to save my great-great-grandmother and great-great-grandfather, right? Because he helps them to mend their bonds.
Reconcile,
and then he helps his great-great-grandfather reconcile with his great-grandmother,
a lot of reconciliation going on.
Yeah, a lot of that. And, you know, he brings that, the life of music and the gift of music to his family. And so, like that, but I think the big reward, I think if you had to break it down, would be the fact that he gets his family's acceptance for who he is, right? That he's a musician, not a shoemaker. And his family supports him in that. And that's huge, right? I mean, that to me, I think is big. The guitar's big, but that is big.
Definitely.
I do think that this movie, or even just taking this concept in, like, fleshing it out into a D&D campaign would be pretty cool. And I think what's really nice about this, especially if you've got, you know, slightly older kids than what we have, where you're talking about different cultures, and you're talking about different different ways that different
different people, traditions, different, different cultures traditions and stuff.
That this, I mean, you don't even have to. I mean, we're gonna let them see the movie, so it doesn't matter. But you don't even have to pull in the movie. You could just pull in this piece into a campaign, right? Because we've used D&D in some school stuff for our 5-year old, right? Where it's simple, like patterns and math and shapes, right?
Repeating
and colors
stuff
and,
that went through her lessons and her homeschool material. That we even bought a book. The teacher gamer handbook. We backed the Indiegogo for that, and you can actually buy that book now.
Oh, is that
separate?
One?
Yeah, yeah, we'll put a link
in that. But so, which is for her age, is awesome because you can just like, oh hey, how do you get into this dungeon door? Look, there's numbers across the, you know, maybe you have to write out the numbers, whatever, right? So or do the pattern or whatever. So that's cool, but when she's a little bit older, and when all of her kids are a little bit older, if we want to start introducing some different cultures, this is kind of a cool way to do it.
Yeah.
To be like, hey, this is what happened in, you know, in Mexico, blah, 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 whatever, right? And the same, kind of the same thing with, like, the Mulan does that, where they pray to their ancestors mm-hmm. and stuff, and they're very ancestral-centered, you know, in Asia, they're very ancestor-centered traditions and culture. That'd be another place, another thing you could pull in there. To talk about some of these cultures that you don't have to be limited to what's in the textbook. You know, find some cool stuff and then put it in a D&D game, right? And then you can they'll remember it more. It'll be much more interesting.
I agree. I mean, the big thing we talk about with a lot of these is just opening your mind to these movies. You know, like I said, this is a new one for us. It's not one we've watched a whole bunch, but it's one we will watch a whole bunch.
Yes.
Because we enjoyed it.
Yeah.
In addition to that, but it's just watching, you know, the first time I watched it was to prepare for this.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But the second time I got to just kind of enjoy it a little bit more. And now you're starting to I'm picking up on a few more things and noticing things. We're just seeing the ideas. I mean, we didn't talk about this. We don't talk about these movies in this context before we record this stuff.
Yeah, no, we
watch the movie. We just talk about what movie we're going to do.
Uh-huh.
We watch the movie. And then we hit record and see what happens. Yeah. So all this stuff that we've come up with, and I don't think of myself as a very creative person. I tried to create an adventure the other day using the Lazy DM's companion stuff, and I had nothing. Like, I couldn't come up with anything. And here we are. It's like, oh, I could run a whole let's go. Let's go set
right,
up
our, let's go do a, let's go do a,
let's
a
go
game
to the,
right
let's
now.
Go set up our minis and let's run a Land of the Dead adventure right now.
Right.
Let's do it. I got that.
Yeah. Well, and that's kind of the whole point of this. The whole point of this is especially, I mean, I think any age of kid, you're the TV's on a lot anyway. But with the young ones, you watch the same movies over and over and over because you know it's okay for them to watch or they enjoy it. I mean, how many times have we watched Ride the Last Dragon in the last month? Like, you know,
all of them.
I know. It's like every time you sit down, it's like, we want to watch Sisu. Okay, of course you do. And so by the 50th time, you're pulling your hair out because you're so numb to it. And so this is a way that maybe you can start thinking of. And like we said, I mean, this isn't just to get just for entertainment purposes. It's also for teaching, right? To educate. Where, okay, what colors were there? What numbers did they use? You know, how many kids? How many this? Like, okay, what did they have to do? What did they say? And it's just making sure that they're paying attention, they're learning, rather than, oh, they're watching the same movie again.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely has some options and things like that there. Yeah, but that kind of wraps it up for Coco, the 2017 Disney movie based around the family and the Day of the Dead.
Yeah. And I liked it a lot. And I think I do think, as with all movies, parents should watch it before they let their kids watch it anyway. But we're going to let our kids watch this one. I think, you know, it's a simple matter. Hey, this is pretend. They know it's pretend. And they pretty much understand that, and I think they're gonna love it. I really do.
Yeah, so if you watched Coco, or if not, you know, you have access to Disney Plus or whatever, go check the movie out and let us know how you would use Coco in your D&D campaign or your RPG campaigns. We'd love to open up a conversation about that with anybody listening to it.
Yeah.
So as always, thank you guys for listening.
Thanks everyone.
Thank you for listening to Geek and Country's D20 Date Night Discussions. If you enjoyed what you heard, you can check us out on our website, geekandcountry.com. Please share and subscribe for more content. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, and Twitter. The links are in the description.